This is the February 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net and Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org, willag.org, where you can still purchase your tickets for the All Day Ag Outlook. That's coming up Tuesday of next week at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $40 through Friday, so make sure you get your tickets picked up by then at willag.org. Of course, we'll have Kurt Kimmel on the stage with us. Thank you, Kurt, for being with us. He's at agmarket.net. And Dave Chatterton will not be there, but we will be talking about crop insurance with Gary Schnitke on that day. And Dave's going to talk a little bit about that at the moment. Dave, I want to start with that, and then we'll get the list after we're done having a quick discussion about crop insurance of the things that we should talk about as it's related to the marketplace. So let's begin with crop insurance decisions that producers should make. The short version of what Gary Schnitke would say is lower your RP, take ECO, and if you want to, take SCO. When you talk to producers, what kinds of things are they asking about and what are you telling them?
Yeah, Todd, it's a great question, and of course, it's the time of year, and you know, right now, those spring crop insurance prices, we got another day to go, sitting basically right at the 460 level in corn and just over $11, 1107 or 1108 in beans, and so very similar to what we've seen the last 3 years, a little bit of change there, but not enough to really do. What we have seen change are the changes that were included in the One Big Beautiful Bill that changed the subsidies and the Title I programs for crop insurance, and keep in mind the two of those are going to work together. So your ARC and PLC and your FSA programs, your Title I's, there's been some significant changes there. There's also a delayed sign-up this year where you don't have to sign up by March 15th. But, you know, that's one side of the equation. The other side, to your point, is crop insurance. And what we are seeing, I mean, when I sit down with guys one-on-one or when we've been doing our group meetings, one of the first things that always comes up is the drought, how dry it is, particularly in our area here in central Illinois. And if you're listening in parts of Indiana or maybe southern Illinois, I mean, maybe not quite as dry there, but certainly when you look at this drought map, it encompasses a big portion of Indiana, Illinois, eastern Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, some very important states. So what we are seeing is exactly what you mentioned of guys either, you know, last year I think guys were dropping our RP rates to maybe from 85 to 80 or lower and picking up the full ECO component, which takes you from 86 to 95. This year, because of the changes in SCO being very affordable, we're finding really people aren't gapping those policies in a way that they used to, but they're sticking primarily with an 80 or 85% product, but then picking up, you know, the SCO and the ECO will take you to a 96% level on a county basis. But some of the offset products that go alongside and bolt along the ECO or the SCO coverage up to those higher levels also offer you individual optional unit coverage. And when we put all those together and price them, we're not really much above what we would have been paying last year for, you know, just the ECO product. So a lot of uptake on that. Guys are worried about drought and their own yields, and they're looking to get into those higher price guarantees.
And so to talk about the subsidy levels that came along in the Big Beautiful Bill Act, ECO, SCO now subsidized at an 80% level. I don't recall what exactly the change in the RP products were, but I think that subsidy was upped as well. As you're thinking about this, running up to that 95% coverage level, that's a lot of coverage, but it's also that from whatever your RP coverage up is really cheap.
Well, it's a county-based product, and as you said, those subsidies on both ECO and SCO went from 65% to 80%, and really what that means is the government is paying 80% of what that premium should be on an actuarial basis, and so it becomes very compelling. If you look at the premium to liability ratios of SCO, it's probably 20 to 25 to 1 in central Illinois for corn and beans. If you look at it on ECO, it's running around, you know, 8 to 10 to 11 to 1. So certainly they're attractive products to do that. I think one thing we need to make mention of is that keep in mind that ECO and SCO are county products. So if you're, you know, make sure that you correlate with the county. Doesn't mean you have to out-yield the county. Doesn't mean you have to be right on top of the county average. But what we want to see is a historical precedent of where if your yields go up, the county goes up, or if your yields go down, the county goes down, because you don't want to get caught in a situation where you're the farm that didn't have the rains and the county performed well and you're holding the bag, so to speak. The individual offset products can help with that. I think what's changed there, Todd, is that a year ago, there was really only one AIP or insurance provider in that game and providing that product, and so it was priced accordingly. This year, we have seven. And so the prices have gotten much more competitive. They change a lot county to county. It's important to look at, you know, the options that you have based on your own farm and where you farm. But it's, you know, there's a lot there to look at, either fortunately or unfortunately.
What you're saying is that if you have a farm that does not perform as well as the county generally, it always lags. Maybe it is a farm that in our area might be HEL or highly erodible land, something along those lines. You want to take the RP product first there and then maybe or maybe not add the ECO, because that is on, that really is, the RP is on your yields, that farm, and the ECO and SEO are on what the county averages are.
I think yes and no, Todd. I mean, I think you want to be careful dropping your RP in that situation. But if you feel like, you know, and historically we have tools in our shop that we can go back and look at your historical 10-year averages and say, does it match up to the county? And again, what we're looking for is correlation. You can yield below the county, but what I want to see is that correlation of the years where you do good, the county does good. And the years where you do not as good, the county doesn't do as good, so that we know you've got some coverage there. Adding that individual offset product in on top of that SCO and ECO, or alongside, I should say, is a way to kind of blunt that issue and get yourself, you know, the earliest claim at the 95% level on an individual optional unit basis. Now, with all these county products, the downside is the cash flow, right? You don't get paid in the fall. You have to wait till June when the RMA issues the yields, and that's when you collect your check for the previous year's crop. So It's very similar to this year, where we're looking at, you know, maybe SDRP payments followed by the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, followed by another round of SDRP, and maybe a second, you know, aid program followed by ECO payments, followed by ARC and PLC payments in the fall, all for last year's crops. But, you know, we're not collecting that last, you know, we're not collecting that last fall or this spring. We're collecting that later this spring and summer. And so it's a cash flow issue from a P&L perspective.
Two things. If you have not signed up for the bridge assistance payment, the Farmer Bridge Assistance, you can do so. That's easily enough done. You can do it the old-fashioned way through your FSA office. Talk to them, call in. They can send you the paperwork, or you can go online to farmers.gov. That's farmers with an S, .gov. And you can sign up through there, but you also need a login from the government as well. Takes a bit to get through that, but it's not too bad, and it's pretty quick and simple and easy to do. Now, given that, I do want to transition now to talking about the marketplace, but I want to stay with you for just a second as it's related to what you're hearing from producers on their acreage and how they expect to put that in the ground this year. Not planting, that is, but how many planted acres for corn and soybeans, and if it varies very much in your perspective from what you're hearing across the Midwest from what USDA put out in the ag form, which was, you know, 94 million acres of corn and 85 million acres of soybeans.
Yeah, Todd, great question. I mean, I think a lot of people looking at, you know, what should my acreage mix be for 2026, and especially based on the situation around China and the potential for them to, you know, maybe buy more beans or a further trade deal with this April meeting between Trump and Chinese President Xi. So in our area, we're finding guys sticking to rotation. So Central Illinois, Central Indiana, more or less sticking to that 60-40 rotation that is historically common. I think when we spread out from that, there's a little bit more variation. And because of, you know, even based on the farm doc documents and kind of looking through the U of I, looking through those numbers and in a P&L perspective, guys are still leaning a little bit heavier into corn than maybe I think the government indicated. Now, I don't think 94 is undoable or impossible, but I think that number could creep higher to, you know, a little bit closer to 95 or maybe slightly above that, just as we find a few more corn acres. Now, certainly we're going to rotate out of that higher number for corn last year, and I think the USDA has the trend right. I think the tweak is in exactly kind of where we go. The other end of the spectrum, I have a few farmers who are talking about going all beans, you know, just because it's a bet on China and they're going to buy these beans from the U.S. for political reasons, and we're going to have a very tight balance sheet. Domestic crush has been very strong, and we could get that carry out to a point where, you know, price rationing is required via price. So I guess, very opposite ends of the spectrum there. And, you know, a few farmers willing to lay down that bet. I don't know that I'm in that camp, but.
We're talking, of course, here on Commodity Week with Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing, and we'll be doing crop insurance business on Tuesday next week when we're at the All Dag Outlook in the Beef House. Thank you much for taking some time with us today. Good luck on Tuesday next week. Also with us today is Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. He'll be on stage talking about the corn market next week. So let's pick up with this acreage discussion. AgMarket.net has offices across the whole of the Midwest. I know you've been collecting some thoughts from everybody as it's related to what acreage looks like. What are you hearing?
Yeah, pretty well agreeing with what Dave mentioned there. I think we're going to see the rotation here in the east for sure. I think probably the corn number is a little low. It's going to come up, and the beans, of course. But when you look at the bigger picture in the west, is mainly where you're probably going to see more corn or stick to corn from the standpoint a year ago, basis on beans was $1.40, $1.50 under. Plus, too, you get in that upper northwest, 40, 50 bushel beans. That's not good enough to kind of cut the old cash flow. So they've been kind of happy with the corn. I think corn yields up in that northwest was a little better than anticipated, so they're comfortable going of corn. We'll see what the March 31st intentions report shows, but definitely a few less corn acres and a few more bean acres. And back to Dave's point on the crop insurance, it's a great program. It's going to get everybody signed up, but two, don't use that as your sole marketing tool. Crop insurance and grain marketing goes hand in hand. Plus, two, there's hopefully going to be some additional bushels there's not covered you need to market. Then, two, as we go through the growing season, the challenge has always been try to do a little bit better on marketing than the spring price.
Well, let's follow up on the marketing. So many people will think to themselves, hey, if I'm covered now with my RP, my SEO and ECO, what else do I need to do? You really do need to make some sales at some point, or at least do that, whether it's cash or on paper.
Yeah, I think you got to use some price strength. I believe we're going to have some giddy up here during the growing season. I think you got to use that price up increase to kind of get some bushels price to move. You're still going to need cash flow, and you need to make some timely decisions. We need that cash flow to meet some financial needs.
Okay. So now that we've kind of set the table, we look forward into this year. We're going to talk about what that weather really means. I'm going to stay with you for just a second. What's your favorite weather source saying about the growing season?
Well, it's a great. And my favorite weather source probably going to be Eric Snodgrass coming up here from the standpoint. If you look at that drought monitor, it's not dry. It's dry, dry. We're one shade of red from extreme drought. So therefore, we're going to need some timely rains throughout the entire growing season. As you move forward in through here, they're going to get the biggest play in through here. The guys in western Iowa, in the north-south Dakota, they're pretty comfortable. There's not a whole lot of drought concerns there, and they think they're in pretty good shape. But it's the eastern belt you got to watch real close. Going clear down to Texas, it's just not isolated here. It's just going to come down to getting that forecast every 6 hours.
Well, I will say that Eric Snodgrass will also join us at the Beef House on Tuesday. You can, too, willag.org. The cost, $40 through the 27th. Make sure you get your tickets and join us. That includes your Beef House noon hour meal, cinnamon rolls in the morning, too. All the details and the agenda are online. I want to hear from you as well about what producers have been telling Strategic Farm Marketing about conditions on the ground for them. And if that makes much of a difference to how they are thinking about their marketing plans, I suppose if it's dry, usually they stop thinking about marketing plans.
Yeah, that's true, Todd. And so it's, you know, it's the same process. But I talked to a producer in central Illinois here today, actually in Champaign and Pike County, who had done a tile project, dug down 9 feet and couldn't find any moisture. And so almost unheard of in our part of the world. So to Kurt's point, you know, this is very different than 2012. If you look at the drought map for, you know, mid-February in 2012, there wasn't one, so to speak, at least in our areas. It was a good spring. I think at the, you know, coming out of that planting season, folks thought, hey, I've got a really good crop in the ground. And then come June, the faucet turned off and it didn't rain again. This year is a little bit different situation where you get a lot of crop in the ground early and quickly if it stays dry. Now, the maps aren't necessarily leading to that, but I think everybody, as I mentioned earlier, is a little bit concerned about it because when you're having a crop insurance discussion, it's one of those things that comes up. How do I cover myself if it's 2012 and what will happen or what do my claims look like if I get that type of a yield reduction? So it's on farmers' minds, and I think it makes them a little bit more hesitant to market. The other side of that is we're just getting that crop insurance put, if you will, underneath the crop. And keep in mind, one of the changes made in that one big beautiful bill was to the Title I program, where if you take SCO, you're no longer required to take PLC. You can take ARC County with that. And we're seeing producers, you know, that effectively can give you a double up at that 86% on a county level, down to a certain level. And so, you know, you have to market in a way that, you know, when the market's rallying, you have to be aware of where your break even and kind of where your coverage levels are in terms of what that means of my ARC payment or PLC payment going away, my potential crop insurance indemnity going away, and when do I need to pull that trigger, okay? And then on the downside, you do have a little bit more cushion maybe than you've had in the past. But again, no falling asleep at the wheel here. That crop has to be sold at some point, and whatever you sell it for is what your revenue is going to be, you know, times your yield, of course. But.
Yeah, so the bankers for producers usually will say, please take crop insurance. That gives us peace of mind, because we know that if things go poorly for the growing season, then you will still be made whole. That should give producers some peace of mind when they're marketing as well. That's usually how everybody puts it forward.
Yeah, there's products out there now, both on insurance and marketing, to give you that peace of mind, hopefully let you sleep at night to get through this low price scenario. So, you know, as we move forward here through the growing season, what we're looking at, as we mentioned, dry weather concerns and so forth. We've come in, and as far as old crop goes, get it moved, get your money, but do some type of replacement strategy. So if the market does take off, you're on board. If not, you're out a few cents. As far as new crop goes, we've been laying a few hedges in, doing some put strategies, but two, these August short-dated call options for 10 cents, that gets you through July, first part of pollination. So if you're uneasy about some type of weather concern going into pollination, that's where your bang for your buck is, we feel, as we go into the spring, early summer.
Let's talk about soybeans and the chart at the moment, where you think things might be. Most in the business will say, you know, soybeans don't stay in the $11 range for very long. They either go back into the 10s or they go up to 12s. Does it feel this time like 12's a better opportunity to you?
Giddy up. I tell you what, these beans have been climbing the wall of worry ever since last fall. Everybody's been bearish beans, but they've done nothing but hang in there. Beans were sold last fall, so I'm under the opinion we've got some price strength in here. Near term, I would watch the November new crop around this 1147 area. That's kind of a chart gap that left a while back that sticks out like a sore thumb. But these beans, you look at don't get the acres and have a little weather, and if China comes in as a surprise buyer, we can have some up in through here. So watch the commodity funds. They're long for a reason. Short term in here, there is a little bit of a double top in the charts, but if we go through that, $12.
One of the other things that might be driving soybeans, and the FarmDoc team wrote about this on the website today as it relates to the RFS and RVOs, 45Z as well. Particularly, you have probably seen it in the price of bean oil over the last several months, is that it appears there will be a push for renewable diesel, biomass-based diesel of advanced fuels of some sort. Could be driven by all kinds of vegetable oils, corn oil from ethanol plants, of course, soybean oil, UCO, probably will be in that, or cooking oil, used cooking oil, maybe imported. It will depend on the RINs a little bit. And canola oil, according to Scott Irwin, after I talked to him a bit this week. How does that play into your thoughts as it's related to soybeans going forward?
Yeah, it's a big part of what's going on, Todd. And I mean, if you look historically, you've got the bean balance sheet, you have two big drivers of demand. You have crush and you have exports, right? Those used to be, you know, it used to be exports were the big dog. Then it was even crush is now 60, 62, 64% of overall demand for U.S. soybeans. It's the big dog, and it's been performing. We've had record month after record month after record month of crush in the United States, and it's, you know, it's feeding and it's building. And we got news today that the Trump administration was going to try and reallocate at least a minimum of 50% of any SRE or small refinery exemptions that were included in the new biofuel guidance, which a number that had been talked about, but to see it in print, I think really, you know, livened up the market a little bit. Bean oil making a new high and dragging soybeans to, you know, to a new high with it, and you know, before the China news came out. So certainly it's something that's being watched, and it's, we have a two-tiered system here. And to your question, you know, back to the point of, are we going to go to 12 or 14, or are we going to drop down to 9? It's going to be one of the two. I think China, if they come in here and buy an additional 8 million metric tons, that's 295 million bushels. The USDA for old crop right now has a 350 million bushel carryout on paper. We can argue that, but the math doesn't work. You take 300 off of 350, and we're well below pipeline, and we're into that rationing situation that's $12 or $14 beans. The opposite of that, let's say in April, Trump and Xi meet. Goes sideways, goes bad. They say, keep the beans that we haven't shipped on the first 12 million metric tons. We're not taking the other 8 million metric tons. And all of a sudden, our balance sheet jumps from 350 to 500, 550, 600, and you're back in that sub-10 category. It's a really tough situation. But underlying all that, we do have a demand base in soybeans, and it's domestic. And hopefully, it's getting better with, you know, once we have the guidance released.
Okay, there's a lot of moving parts in that, so I think you have some thoughts as to what producers should do.
Well, we've got these new plants coming on, so they're going to crush, they're going to gather some beans, but bean oil stocks, 1.9 billion, it's up there pretty lofty, but on the other side, too, you talk canola oil stocks are fairly low, so we're going to probably use these bean oil stocks up. But as far as producers go, I think you just got to be flexible and put yourself in a position to protect your downside, but leave your upside open and take advantage in case this thing does giddy up.
All right. Now turn your attention to the corn market. Interesting, because there are years where we talk about corn all the time. There are years where we talk about soybeans all of the time. Soybeans tend to be during the Trump years, actually, honestly, because of the tariffs in China, I suppose. Corn, less so, but we do have a second crop, corn, that's being planted in Brazil, even as we speak, a little behind because their harvest is behind at this point. It should be a big one, though. I'm wondering what you're thinking about that second crop and its impact on the marketplace.
Yeah, it's there. It's going to depend on weather. We'll see how that comes out. You got to remember, though, they've talked about the discount in South America. We've always had a discount in South America. It's not going to go away. So our objective here is to capture some demand. But here in the U.S., it's a whole different ballgame. One is feed usage. True feed usage is strong. We're feeding the heavier weights. When you feed the heavier weights, you got to have more feed because the conversion gets a little skinnier as the weight goes up. Ethanol demand just won't go away. It's still there. We're needing ethanol. And above all, exports. It's export to Mexico. Some of the commercial guys feel that's front-loaded. I don't think so. I think this Mexican corn demand is going to stay strong. Feedlot demand, they've built processing plants in Mexico now. They're shipping across carcasses, so they're not going to shut those down. So exports to Mexico is going to remain strong. And plus, too, Cambodia and some of these other countries continue to come in here and buy some small lot amounts. So this corn demand is strong. I don't think it's strong to go to $5-6 right away until we get into some dry weather.
Yeah, to your point on Safrina, I mean, the crop, you know, is going in a little bit later than normal. But keep in mind, that portion of the Brazilian crop, it's about 60% of their overall production, but it's almost the entirety of their export. So it's very important to where we're at. And the downside, the crop going in a little bit late, is that it could drag out and get into the dry season with pollination and grain field. The upside is it's going to have a lot of moisture to get started because harvest is behind because it's been raining in northern Brazil and particularly in Mato Grosso. So it's a, you know, we'll have to watch that develop along the way. But in the meantime, Argentine corn is currently 15, 20, 25 cents below U.S. values offered today. So we have some competition coming down the road on exports for corn. How much that's going to slow down our demand? Probably not a lot, but the chances for the USDA to overperform on exports or demand and corn in general right now, the USDA has demand in the balance sheet right now at a record level by 8%. Okay, well, it's a case of a record large crop, more acres and more yield added in January, and record large demand. But unfortunately, the supply growth is exceeding the demand growth, at least for this year. So, you know, upside in corn has been sneaky. We've made back a lot of those gains that we lost, you know, after the January report. But having said that, the upside here, I think, is tied probably to soybeans and how high they can drag the complex and drag maybe corn along with it. So it's been a, you know, kind of a, as you mentioned, I mean, unfortunately, the spotlight has been China, 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 beans, beans, beans. But a lot going on in the corn side that's not getting talked about, I guess.
Are you worried that wheat, which apparently USDA feels like is going to be a drag on the marketplace, will be the leader as opposed to soybeans?
We've seen a move here in wheat of late. I think, you know, if you look at the fund positions, they've been short wheat for the better part of 3 years. And I think the uncertainty in the marketplace, whether it's, you know, what's going on with China, whether it's the geopolitical angst of what's happening in the Middle East and Iran and Venezuela and all these things that Trump is having. We've got trouble with Cuba now. All those have kind of added into a situation where there's some risk that's come off the table. And I think wheat's been a beneficiary of that. But we had word or confirmation today there's two Argentine cargoes coming into the U.S. Southeast. So we are not competitive in the export market. In fact, it's so cheap in Argentina, it can be imported here. So it's very difficult for me to get bullish wheat in that scenario where we don't have that export component. Wheat, you know, priced itself in as a feed grain. It's all fine. You know, it's competing for the feed ration, but it's very tough for me to see wheat overperforming from a demand perspective and sustaining a rally.
Does it hold down the price of corn in that case?
Well, they'll move somewhat in tandem, a lot of spread activity. But you got to remember, you trade wheat, you'll sleep in the streets. So it's a different breed of cat. It's a tough commodity. But one thing that Dave mentioned is when wheat, we got to watch the quality of wheat so it doesn't go into feed wheat and be competitive with some of these other grains. For the most part, we'll see how the wheat greens up. But it's extremely dry in some of these wheat growing regions in the West.
Let's wrap up our conversation. We'll get a final thought from both of you. We'll start with you, Dave Chatterton, from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, Todd, it's going to be, I think this last 12 months and maybe the couple of months coming up, been a proving ground for the way that your P&L on the farm is going to operate in the future. And it's going to be a combination, and increasingly an important combination, of how you structure and set up your crop insurance, your agronomy and how you grow the crop and what you yield, how you market, and how well you participate in government programs. And you got to be able to stack all of those pieces together to get the best potential outcome. And this year we're looking at, you know, maybe ARC or PLC payments in Champaign County that are $50, $70 an acre on corn. We're looking at bridge payments. We're looking at all these things. You have to be in position to make sure you're keeping up with the latest acronyms, educate yourself on the programs that are out there, and structure your crop insurance that you're maximizing some of those government programs as well. And just have an education, know what's available, and make sure you're stacking that in a way that gives you, to Kurt's point, that sleep quotient through the summer here.
And Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net, your final word.
Yeah, option volatility has been fairly low, but it's starting to creep up. So if you're an option buyer, I think you need to get that job done here before we go in the field this spring. But you look at all these other markets, particularly the metals and particularly silver, you know, anything can happen at any time. So all years to have some replacements in place or upside, I think this is the year to do it. There's enough moving parts in the world. You just don't know what's going to happen. And one final thought, full moon is on March 3rd.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or in your favorite podcast applications. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Kurt Kimmel at AgMarket.net and Dave Chatterton at Strategic Farm Marketing.